Okay, let's get right back to it. Time for our nightly coronavirus report with Dr. Henry Nyman, PhD, one of the world's top virologists, who has been here. Well, we did our first full hour on this problem January the 8th. We've been doing it Monday through Friday for you, keeping you updated as much as we can. There are a lot of issues here that are medical, a lot of them scientific, a lot of them sociological, and there are some politicized parts of this whole mess, which continue to be rather amazing to watch. Trump has done an enormous reversal, finally. It's almost like he listened to the program and got it. I don't know how much he really got, but he got it enough to actually engage in an enormous messaging shift. He's now saying coronavirus is going to get a lot worse before it gets better, which is a 180 from what he used to say. He also pleads with Americans now to please wear masks to better protect them and those around them. Interesting. This was the first White House briefing in weeks, many weeks. Tony Fauci was not there and says he wasn't invited. Why am I not surprised? Press Secretary McEnany says that Trump is tested multiple times a day. But the Donald said, no, I don't remember more than once a day. So they had a little miscommunication issue there. Coronavirus is spreading faster than testing expansion will allow. Another story from Politico, the true number of coronavirus infections is likely 10 times larger than reported by the CDC. Could be. Coronavirus vaccines with even minor side effects could still be very bad, according to another story. There's just an awful lot here to consider. Many sides, many angles. It's like a prism. The more you look at it, the more differences you see. Good story also up there. Three simple acts can stop coronavirus outbreaks. Read the story. They're common sense. Social distance, masks, wash your hands. That's really all it'll take to get a better handle on this crisis. Palm Beach County in Florida has been picked as the coronavirus vaccine trial venue. We'll watch that one for you as well. We have a report in from the Western Journalists Society. Reports of coronavirus surging in infants are not true. So somebody may have gone off the deep end with that one. Got a lot of things going on here. Florida County mask at home order. Wear your mask at home order draws bewilderment and outrage, and authorities said it only applies to guests in your home. So if you have guests in your home in one county in Florida, they better mask up. There you go. All right, let's get right back to business here with Dr. Henry Nyman. Welcome back, Henry. I didn't mean to take all your thunder, but Trump's finally coming to terms, at least what it looks like, with the severity of the problem that he has by and large created. Interesting.
Right. He's getting there, and that is what I was going to lead with. He held the first briefing since April, actually. And
wow, months.
Back in April, there were a million U.S. cases, and now there's 3.4 million. So it's gone up by almost 2.5 million since he had the last press briefing.
That we know about. Right. That we know about.
Right. These are the confirmed cases that are listed by the various state agencies and the CDC. So this is the official confirmed cases, and it's almost at 3.5 million. It was less than 1 million when he gave the last briefing, which kind of ended with the UV light somewhere in your body, and coupled with inhaling Lysol, and that didn't didn't go over big, and that was really the last one. But as you mentioned, I think it's his polls look bad enough that he figured he had to do something, especially after he had that interview with Chris Wallace. And so right. he held the first one today. Now, it was very different than all of the prior ones that he held. He was the only person speaking. He was the only person standing there. There was, I think, one other person sitting on the sides there. So he didn't He didn't bring his entourage out. He didn't bring any scientists out. He didn't have anybody else speak. He did speak from notes, and you know, the two big points are the two that you mentioned. He did an about face on the mask. He had actually tweeted earlier something about it being the patriotic thing to do, and showed a picture of himself wearing a mask. And then he didn't wear a mask at the briefing, but he did tell the public that they should wear masks, even if they don't like it and they can't social distance. You know, if they can't social distance, they should wear masks, even if they don't like it. And he did say that the pandemic was going to get worse before it got better. In response to a few questions, it didn't go on and on. I mean, the whole thing took less than a half an hour, including the questions. It was probably 10 minutes worth of questions and 20 minutes worth of talk, or maybe just half and half. There was a question about the virus, and he once again did repeat that it will disappear. And he stopped saying when it was going to disappear, so he didn't put a date on it, and he kind of did it on the assumption that eventually it's going to disappear, and then he's going to be right, you know, whenever it disappears sometime in the future. And as I said yesterday, he still doesn't seem to know the difference between an epidemic and a pandemic. And epidemics disappear; pandemics don't. I mean, they might modify somewhat, but it's not like the virus goes away. So the virus that he says is going to disappear, there is really no reason to believe that's true. It may disappear decades from now, and humans might disappear decades from now. So I don't know which one's going to come first, right? So, but yeah, he's making a prediction that really means nothing, because A, he doesn't put a date on it, and B, he doesn't say how it's going to disappear, and it's still in line with his magical thinking. And then
all things aside, we've got to give credit where credit's due. All right, he's changed, at least today.
Right, that was nice, that's nice what I thing. Said. The briefing was dramatically different. I mean, he used to go on for a couple hours and really say absolutely nothing and just argue with reporters. And so the responses to the reporters weren't that argumentative. They didn't go on forever. And the whole thing, lasted, I think, less than a half an hour. Uh-huh. He was asked about responsibility, and he didn't say he didn't have any responsibility, but he said that he's got responsibility and the governors have responsibility, that we all had responsibility. So he kind of gave that as far as the responsibility was concerned. He did say that they were working on something, so working on a plan, but there were no specifics on what that plan was or when that plan was going to be implemented or, what it was going to target. Well, he didn't say anything. And then there were a lot of things he didn't say. I mean, like I said, he didn't have any scientists there. One of the questions was about where are the scientists. He says, he's got in the hall. You know, she's available. She's nearby. Fauci wasn't there. Nobody else. He didn't mention anybody else. Nobody else made an appearance. And he really didn't address exactly what he's going to do. He didn't talk about the school openings / closings. And meanwhile, the pandemic moves right along. And there were, you know, some significant developments on that front. The pandemic numbers, again, are up. The total got above 70,000 again.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite a few of my, I usually send the results from states that have more than 1,000 cases. And, you know, just to give you an idea, I'll just go over the 1,000 team. It's not just in the South. Pennsylvania had 1,027. California had 10,554. Illinois had 1,055. Florida, I don't know. The difference in what they listed was 14,000. They might have only had 10, and some bookkeeping thing had it higher. Louisiana had 1,691. Texas had 9,305. Georgia had 3,414. Ohio had 1,047. Tennessee had 2,190. North Carolina had 1,815. Missouri had 1,328. Arizona had 3,500. Alabama had 1,467. Mississippi had 1,635, easily an all-time high for them. Wisconsin had 1,117, South Carolina had 1,892, and Oklahoma, the site of Tulsa, had 1,714, easily a record high for them by quite a large margin. And then there were a lot of others that had between 500 and 1,000. One just missed it. It had, I think it was Virginia had 996 or something. But anyway, that's what it had. So the numbers are pushing higher again. It's fairly widespread. There's more in the South and the West, and there are other places. But the other marker for today is the death count is back above 1,000. It got up to 1,097, and the top states all topped 100. California had 116 deaths. That might actually go a little higher before the day's out. Florida has 134. Texas has 131. Arizona has 134. And a couple are kind of between 50 and 100 now. Georgia had 78, and South Carolina had 57. So the number's above 1,000 now. And they're, you know, in that same vein, just as a reality check as to why you know, the mask and getting a little bit more serious is important. Beyond Trump's poll numbers, the University of Washington came out with a new set of estimates on deaths. And they went all the way to the end of the year, and they gave ranges for three different scenarios. The most optimistic, which is probably the least realistic, is 95% of the public is compliant for masks, and they recognize and practice social distancing. Under that scenario, which I think is highly unlikely, they project that by the end of the year, the death toll in the United States will be between 175,000 and 223,000. But then they give the numbers for what happens if the compliance with the masks isn't as high, and only some of the people kind of honor the social distancing, which is probably where we are today, if that. You know, I'm not even sure we even make those parameters, but we kind of go along like we are today, and there isn't further easing. Then their projections by the end of the year are 234,000 to 398,000. So just about 400,000 dead by the end of the year if we kind of keep going like we're going. And then if you go where there's not much social distancing mandated anywhere, that the governors say you can't make masks mandatory, you got to send the kids back to school, and it's time to get back to work, which is kind of what Trump said in his speech today. You know, we put these lockdowns on and, you know, prevented the number of deaths going to 1 to 2 million, and he saved, you know, millions of lives by doing that, but now it's time to get the economy going again. So if we kind of jump in with both feet on getting the economy going again, and kind of ignore some of the social distancing, by the end of the year, the death toll is projected to be between 288,000 and 650,000. So if we do 650,000, I think that's more than World War II. The 288,000, I think it might be more than World War I and the Korean War, the Vietnam War all combined or something. And I believe that the 649 million would, in fact, 649,000 would, in fact, beat the 1918 pandemic. And these projections are not for, you know, the entire pandemic. Right. They're not even for, they don't even necessarily cover the second wave. This is just by the end of this calendar year, which is December 31st, which is not the end of the season. You know, in all likelihood, the season will be going strong well through the spring. It'll be, you know, competing with the flu season. And they're projecting, you know, actually a little under it. The actual number was 649,582, the number that they put out. And this is the group that actually tends to be fairly optimistic. It's the one that Trump likes to use, and Deborah Brick cites them all the time. And, you know, others might think that that's a little bit on the optimistic side. And so that's a bit of a reality check. I mean, that's what they're predicting if things don't change. And it's really not clear what is expected to change. You know, people may get concerned when, you know, they start running out of body bags and running low on refrigerated trucks to put all the dead bodies, or when they have, you know, what's going on in Arizona or Florida or Texas repeated in many additional states as experiments start with the schools. Now the schools, he didn't mention the schools at all, and the schools are, you know, getting messier and messier. The Florida Teachers Union is actually suing the governor for his order that I believe it says that all schools must have in-class sessions available 5 days a week. And this is in Florida. Now, Florida probably isn't going to even have the Republican convention. Florida is so overrun with virus. And they're already talking about maybe the delegates won't go, and maybe a few delegates will go, and some will go to Charlotte, and some might come by to hear Trump give his acceptance speech in the north. But it's not even clear what's going to happen there. They might not have anything indoor. They might do it outdoor. And my guess is the locals are going to say, I don't think it's a good idea to have it anywhere. You know, why don't you go to Charlotte? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in any event, to mandate all of the schools to have in class in Florida, where they've got 10,000 new cases every day, and they're getting into the golf course, which Trump's favorite golf course, where he put up the video of the guy shouting "White Power" in his golf cart. Trump ended up taking down fairly quickly, but they originally thought they were kind of isolated for reasons they must know, not very obvious, but apparently that didn't last, and so now I think there were 29 cases reported yesterday or so, and the numbers are going up. And most of these are elderly retirement groups, people that live in fairly luxury apartments and ride around on their golf course golf carts all day and either play golf or go out for meals.
Or just ride around in their golf carts. Yeah.
Right. And so now, they are a vulnerable population, and the virus has certainly gotten into their community. The community is huge. I think there's 120,000 people there and 55 golf courses, and I don't know. So it encompasses, I think, three different zip codes. That's the size of it. And so that, I would think, would have a significant impact on the death toll in Florida. And that's an example where, these people thought they were kind of isolated in their community there for some reason beyond me, that apparently all of the Democrats wear masks and none of the Republicans do, and the Republicans are about three-quarters of the population. So with three-quarters of the population in this community of 120,000, it's hard to believe that they expected the virus to stay away. And so it's made its presence, and that's an example. That's not really the example for the schools. The schools will eventually produce that, throughout the state. If they do have the schools open, there's no way that they're going to keep the virus out, and no way that the students that get infected are going to bring the virus home, and they're going to affect their parents or their grandparents, and it's not going to be.
Let's talk a little bit. When you're done about vaccine, the Russians have announced that their first vaccine is ready to deploy. No side effects. There are several other vaccines on the tracks. So let's get to that next. Go ahead. Finish up.
Okay. Well, just finishing up, the virus with the school openings is going to take off. So these projections I just gave you, I think you can throw the first one out. You're not going to have 95% of the population with masks and adhering to social distancing. Just opening the schools, I think, will violate most of those regulations. And so I think we're already in the middle group, and school openings in the South are really just a few weeks away, 2 or 3 weeks away now. And that's just going to give the virus another boost, along with another holiday weekend with Labor Day. That'll kind of get the ball rolling some more. And it's starting from a much higher level than it did for Memorial Day. So these numbers are going to start to increase dramatically. Now, as far as the vaccines are concerned, two vaccines were described this week in Lancet. They're both adenovirus vectored. One is done in England, and the other one's done in China. The results were fairly similar, that they essentially got a decent response to the immunization. It was said to be comparable to levels that were seen in patients that had natural infections. They could get activity in T cells, which raises the possibility that it might be somewhat more long lasting than if it was just in the B cells. And there weren't any major adverse effects. You know, people had redness at the site of injection. Some of them had some symptoms of feeling fatigued or tired, but they didn't really have serious side effects, weren't reported in the initial doses. Now, on the downside, there were a couple on the downside. One was that the older patients didn't mount as strong a response as the younger ones. And so the most vulnerable populations that need the vaccine the most are the ones that are going to respond to the vaccine the least. That's not really a big surprise. Same thing happens in flu, that the younger people usually benefit more from the vaccinations than the elderly. And they try to overcome that somewhat with flu, with they use a double the dose. And that's probably the main thing, that they do this different for the seniors. And so they try to give more of the virus to see if they can get a stronger response. Right. Part of the problem is the immune response in general goes down with age, and so the elderly don't have that good of an immune response, period. And so it's not that big a surprise that they don't do as well with the vaccinations. And so they were seeing the same things with this. The other kind of negative was that a subset, they gave a second shot, and they seem to do better as far as the response is concerned. So it sounds like the optimal might require two shots. And two shots is not ideal in the current situation, where there's literally millions, if not billions, of people that should be immunized worldwide. And if you have to do two shots instead of one shot, then you need twice as much of everything, and there's going to be potential shortages of things as simple as syringes or needles. I mean, the both the container and the needle, the various components that just go into, you know, physically administering the vaccine. And then you'd need twice as much vaccine if it's going to be two shots. And then there's a time space between the first shot and the second shot. And ideally, for vaccines, you generally want to be vaccinated ahead of time. It's not ideal to be, you know, have one shot, and before you get the second shot, you get infected.
Right.
And so the vaccination can the infection.
What do you expect, Henry, to happen? We've got half a dozen vaccines at least in the news now by different countries, different companies. Where are we going to end up with this? With, like, vaccine of the week? What are we talking about here?
Well, I think...
Do you have much confidence that we're going to have one that will be tested safely, approved, and finally made available but not forced on people? Which a lot of people are worried about.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be forced on people. I think it'll be the available part is, you know, I don't see it being available this year. And, you know, to get a significant percentage of the population, my guess is that's not until the middle or end of next year. Just as far as scaling up and getting it done. As far as the distribution's concerned, there's somewhat of a competition out there.
Somewhat?
You know, the U.S. kind of set the tone with the remdesivir, where they've got a drug that works, they've got a limited supply, they're not letting anybody else have it, they're only keeping it in the U.S. And so... with these different vaccines, they may follow a similar fate. That, you know, essentially, if the U.S. comes up with a vaccine, you know, they'll want to give it to U.S. citizens first. And if it's the you know, Russia or China ends up with the vaccine, I'm not sure the U.S. will get any of that. You know, so if they come up with that, it's not like, oh, we. Where do we go to get our shot? It's kind of, well, you go wherever your vaccine is. You're not going where this vaccine is. And so the different vaccines may get divided up somewhat based on what groups there are. I think a lot of the groups are kind of formed kind of subgroups where they'll, you know, anybody in the group has it, everybody has it available. I think the U.S. is excluded from most or all of these other groupings. So the U.S. is probably going to be dependent upon something happening in the U.S. or maybe the U.K. one. But I'm not sure how much
We shouldn't hold our breath. And I just want to wrap this up on the vaccine front. We shouldn't really worry about anything coming out this year. It's just not going to happen. Not in terms of availability.
The best that would come out, I mean, I don't really see it, period, because... the safety part is not only to see, you know, whether it works and if you get the vaccine, what percentage of the people, you know, don't get infected versus the ones that didn't get a vaccine.
Right.
You're going to also want to know if there are any adverse effects that show up over time. And so... you're basically going to give the vaccine. You're going to see whether they get infected or not. And then if they do get infected, you're going to look for this potential enhancement. You know, do you get infected and do a lot better? Or do you get infected and you do worse? And so they would need some significant numbers on that category before they would say, oh, it looks good. And you know, start injecting, you know, literally millions of people without knowing, you know, a reasonable amount of safety information. And that's why I don't think that the larger distribution will happen this year. It might start at the beginning of next year. It'll probably start with those at highest risk. So those with underlying, healthcare workers, those with underlying conditions and are
right,
older
right.
might be at the front of the line. And so the general population may not see it, you know, availability till the middle of the year. That's why I say that it's not like they're going to be forcing people to take it. There's going to be a shortage of the vaccine. They're going to give it to people that need it the most, you're most at risk and want it. They're not going to be working on people that don't want it. They might try advertising and try to convince people that, you know, mm-hmm. it's foolish not to get it. But they're not going to, you know, push that hard on people that don't want it because there isn't going to be that much vaccine. Because literally, it's a pandemic. It's not like an Ebola epidemic that hits two or three countries. It's or even a MERS or SARS epidemic that hits one or two countries. This is something that is worldwide, and the virus has already spread worldwide. It's already expanding worldwide. There's probably more virus in the Americas than anywhere in the world, which are the farthest from China.
Uh-huh.
And you know, there's a lot in Africa. There's Europe and Asia. So, I mean, there's billions of people that really should get vaccinated. And to control the virus pretty much requires the whole world to have some type of immunity, that if you have it on one continent and not the others, you know, it's going to spread in the others. It's eventually going to leak over into the one continent that you're doing the vaccines. And the other problem is that since the virus is everywhere and it's at relatively high frequencies, and you know, by the end of this year it'll probably be much higher than it is now, that increases the likelihood that if the vaccine is effective, or if enough people do get infected, so you start to develop some type of herd immunity, and I would put that into a big if category. But if it does get to that level, then there'll be selection pressure for the virus to evade that vaccine. And so if it's effective, and the virus, you know, and most of the virus, you know, can't really transmit, then if you have mm-hmm. a version that evades the vaccine, it won't have any competition, and then it'll quickly take over, and then the only virus circulating will be a vaccine resistant virus, and then you got to kind of make a new vaccine. Now, if you've already got one that's working well, you know, changing the sequence is not that big a deal, and that's kind of what happens with the flu, the target changes every few years
I think
or so.
You're right, what you said. We may never have a stable vaccine to give people. It's stable in terms of dealing with the virus effectively. It's just too many variables, it would seem to me.
Well,
it depends on how,
you know, there's a lot of different combinations. There's literally dozens of vaccines, and then there's lots of antivirals also. And and the idea with the antivirals is to be somewhat similar to HIV/AIDS, you know, that you know, initially you had these protease inhibitors like AZT, and you know, you could administer it; it would work kind of okay, but then the virus would, you know, mutate and be resistant to that, and mm-hmm. you ended up coming up with a cocktail. So you had several different antivirals had multiple targets. And if you did all of those, you're in a position now where the virus itself is still around, but it's controllable. It's not like it used to be. It was a death sentence that you know, eventually you're going to die from the virus, even if you had the antiviral. 30%
of the adult, no, I guess they're over 14 or something like that in Africa, males are infected, and I didn't get a stat on the number of females, but it's probably comparable. They're carrying this virus. They're dealing with it. They're being given this cocktail of antivirals, and they seem to be effective. I would think rather than a virus, we might end up with more effective antivirals to give people to deal with already infected people, that they can knock these virus, knock down the receptors, something.
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down with the
Why don't you invent one, Henry? You'd have more money than you'd know what to do with.
Yeah, well, it's like I said, it's probably going to be a cocktail. No one drug is going to work all that well, and there's a lot of competition. Yeah, there's a lot of companies out there that have their own target and they're trying them out. I mean, I think there's like over 200 different clinical trials that are in progress right now. And so that may be the long-term solution, is that, you know, control it by having a cocktail of antivirals.
I would think that would be more appropriate.
Have vaccines to keep it more under control so you don't have as many people. I mean, if it's not under control, then, I mean, right now, that was the other news item you mentioned. Actually, I heard LabCorp, but then I heard somebody else say Quest. I don't know if it was both of them said it or just what it did.
I definitely heard LabCorp,
but somebody else mentioned Quest, but they might have got them mixed up. But essentially, the national labs are saying they're having trouble keeping up, and they don't really have the ability to expand, you know, dramatically in the near term. And they expect there to be problems in the fall because, you know, they're not only going to have all the testing they have against COVID, they're going to have influenza testing. So the influenza, if it's a busy season, is going to, you know, put the same type of strain on hospital beds and diagnostic testing.
Well, the reagent
shortage. Are being set up to do both. But there's a reagent shortage. The national labs, I think, have shortages on machines and lab space that, you know, they've got things maxed out right now. And they haven't done a dramatic expansion. I don't know how you know, involved that is. To me, it didn't seem like it would be that involved. They would just buy more machines and you know, set them up in more buildings, and it would be fairly scalable. But I don't know, you know, what the limitations are on that, whether there's specialized buildings because they're dealing with biological materials and so it's trickier than just opening one up. Yeah, it takes a little bit more to set them up. But I don't know. In San Diego, they always had wet labs available for leasing them out. And they kind of planned ahead. And that was, you know, 20, 30 years ago. So you'd think that you can get wet labs and get them proper safety and do that expansion. But they seem to say that it's not going to happen this fall. They're expecting there to be delays and shortages, and I guess some of these reagents, I'm not sure what, you know, I didn't think any of them were that exotic, that they required some ingredient that was in short supply somewhere, that it seemed to me that most of these things are pretty off-the-shelf type chemicals and formulas to put these up, whether it's, you know, just having the manufacturing capabilities of, you know, getting a production line set up so that you can make them in quantity and with a short turnaround time, maybe that's what it is. But
still waiting. Here's a quick note from Ventura, California. If you remember, that was the location that the county health department was going to go door to door and test people, and they claimed to be able to have results almost immediately or very shortly thereafter. And they were going to go back and take the people who were infected out of their homes and put them in some central holding facility, treatment area. That was the plan anyway. Well, they've gone ahead now in Ventura and actually locked down a seven-story apartment building that was essentially filled with older Americans, a lot of whom were underlying health conditions and so forth. But they have locked down one seven-story building in Ventura, the building. It's shut down. I mean, they're letting things in, obviously, food and so forth, but the people in there can't come out. They're older. So that's a one-off kind of a deal, we hope.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that story. I mean, I know that some of the counties in Texas, they're basically running out of beds and expect numbers to be doubling in a couple of weeks or something, and they don't really have a plan on how they're going to have handled double the number of patients they have now. But that's the type of problem that could start popping up in multiple places and then create all kind of problem, because that's what the problem is with the virus, is that it can get into an exponential growth state. There can be twice as many. In some states, it looks like it is, but it's hard to say. It's hard to say if these numbers aren't going up that dramatically. I mean, they're going up, but they're not. If it was exponential, and you had 60,000 cases a day, then a week or two later, you'd have 120,000 cases a day. It's not doubling in that type of short time period. Now whether part of that is due to having a limit on how much testing can be done, so that the cases maybe did double, but the number of reported cases didn't, because everything's maxed out. They have drive-in places to give samples, and if they close them at 10 minutes after 9 or something each day, then they're going to be maxed out. The number that they test each day is really going to be the same, and the only way the cases go up is if the percent positive starts going up, and they're really missing a lot of the cases, and so it could be that it's not even the percent positive that goes up, that people just hear about these lines, and then they hear about a 7-day delay in getting the results. So even if they sit in line all day and give a sample, they're not going to know for a week, and a week later is.
I mean, what are they supposed to do in that week?
That useful, right. And especially if you have, a high number of positives is 20-25%, well, that means that 75% of the people that get tested are negative. So it's hard to go ahead and say, well, I'm sure I'm positive. I'm just waiting for confirmation. And then they hear about all these people that didn't get confirmation. They were told that they're negative, and they did X, Y, or Z, assuming they were positive, and then found out they weren't, long after they did all this. And they're trying to avoid the X, Y, and Z. They'd like to, if they're negative, they'd like to just find out and assume that they've got some other type of respiratory disease or something, or, what they think is a cough is an allergy or something, and it's not a... It's not something that they have to be quarantined about and worry about all that. But I mean, the big difference that I'm predicting is in the near term is really going to be centering on the school, and that's just going to be a battle as to how many schools are really going to open and have in-house how many are going to just do online, how many are going to give up a week or two after they open up or a month after they open up. But if it's a month after they open up, you know, that'll give the virus a big jump. I mean, if it takes that long, they'll probably have a lot of people infected before they decide that this isn't going to work. And those people will affect a lot of other people because, you know, as we said many, many times, you're most infectious 1 to 3 days before you show symptoms. So the people that that do end up getting infected will be infecting others long before they know it.
Okay, well, Raleigh, North Carolina, the school district there is going to start with remote learning, they call it now. So no classroom venue for Raleigh, North Carolina. Well, it's all going to start rolling out here any day now, the number of schools who are going to try it and those who are not going to. So we'll find out soon enough.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you, Henry. We'll see what Donald does. Interesting turnaround today, finally.
Yeah,
after 6 months.
Well, I think he's going to have them pretty regularly, so I don't know if he's got another one scheduled for tomorrow or not, but I think they are going to come up. You know, it's not going to be once a week, I don't think. So
very good.
We'll see.
All right.
Okay,
thanks,
take
Henry.
Care. Talk
see
to you tomorrow. Okay, bye-bye.
Good night. All right, Henry Nyman. There you go. It's something you don't want to get. Wash your hands. Go ahead and do the mask. Common sense, and take the supplements that I've suggested. I would really urge you to do that. This is something that is going to be around, unfortunately, for a while. I've seen more people with just the plastic face shields today so they can comply with the law or the rule or the dictate. I'm not sure that I'd want to trust one at all to keep me from inhaling particulates that wouldn't be good for me. But some people are doing that. So at any rate, we'll do this again tomorrow. Tomorrow night is Wednesday already. Wow. Talk to you then. Be well. Take care.